Welcome back to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. We are on 105.5 FM and 1390 AM in Washington, D.C. and KCXL in Kansas City. We now have with us Dr. Jared Ball. He's a professor of communication studies at Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland. And we're going to talk about the stimulus bill, who gets left out. Good morning, Dr. Ball, and welcome to Fault Lines.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Under certainly trying circumstances. Well, you know, my first thought, based on what I saw, to be honest with you, who gets left out. And I know you do a lot of work on, you know, people who are marginalized groups and, you know, often, you know, poor people, people who don't have money. But my immediate answer when I saw when I think who gets left out with this bill, everyone gets left out. $1,200 for 3 months, going to what appears to be a small group of people, based on your 2018 tax returns. To me, it is absolutely absurd that we're even calling, you know, that this is even pretending to help people. But let's talk about that, and let's talk about the people who don't even get any of that $1,200, Dr. Ball.
Well, you make a good point. I mean, first of all, a lot of people who aren't even earning enough to be taxed won't get any of that money. If anything, will get far less than the $1,200 or even the $600 that's supposed to go to individuals. So that's one issue. You already raised on your show another important point, and just even in the intro, that this is based on 2018 tax returns, and a lot has happened to a lot of different people in the last year. So those records aren't even themselves going to be accurate. And then, of course, the money that does reach the few people that are reached won't be adequate in terms of sustaining their already precarious position. So one point that I just want to quickly remind everybody is, if we needed the reminder, is that even before this crisis, the economy was not working, or does not work, or is not meant to work for an overwhelming majority of the people in this country. And when we start to racialize and those class divisions, it gets even worse. So as we start to look now, black and brown people overwhelmingly are going to be impacted by not only this little crumb being knocked off the table of the federal budget to people to fight over, but by the lockdown, the shutdown, the slowdown of the economy, et cetera, because so many of those people are in the gig economy and and even within the underground economy, something that is almost never discussed, that people who require cash, hand-to-hand cash transactions, in-person transactions to sustain themselves, whether illicit drugs, frankly, is part of what sustains people, or just regular unsanctioned spending of some kind.
Dr. Ball, let me give you an example, and I'm sure a lot of people know a lot of stuff like this. I know people who work off of like Craigslist and sites like that, and they do, they do various types of things, everything from like removal of trash from your yards, or grass cutting, or small engine repair, car repair, boat engine repair, you name it. So there are a lot of people who are, in a way, I'd call them entrepreneurs, in that they are finding ways to utilize, you know, various websites to utilize their skills. These are people who, but basically what I see of this stimulus, it just pretends that they don't exist. It's like the people inside the Beltway just say, well, let's handle people who file income tax. Let's handle people from a year and a half ago. Let's give them next to nothing. And they literally are so out of touch that they pretend like a lot of Americans don't exist. Or maybe they're so much out of touch, they don't even recognize that they're there in the first place, Dr. Ball.
So that, not only is that a good point, but it also points out to where I was really just taking too long to get to, is that the reality is none of this stimulus is going to be helpful to anybody, and more importantly, the people who most need it, because it's really just a stimulus to support the stock exchange, Wall Street, the landlord class, the business class that needs the revolving, the movement of capital, the movement of money, the payment of bills, et cetera. So this $1,200 or $600 or whatever people are going to get, they're not going to save it. It's going to go to pay a bill. It's going to likely pay a rent. It's going to be likely to go buy food or pay something that's going to recirculate that money back to those who own the economy, which is what they need. Even before this most recent crisis, there was already concern among the most elite in our society who were saying, not because they want a socialist revolution, but because they were concerned that the poorest working people were not earning enough to buy the products that they were helping produce, and this was ultimately hurting the bottom line of those who own the economy. So even venture capitalists were complaining a year ago, saying, look, we need to close the gaps between rich and poor in this country, not because, again, we want a socialist revolution, we love our capitalism, but because our capitalism needs the twisted form of socialist undergirding to protect itself so that those of us who own the economy can benefit from it, can continue to benefit from it at an exploitative rate that we are. So that's what they were saying as part of their concern, and that's what this infusion of cash is meant to do, and that's why all of the big dollars are going to the largest corporations, including Boeing and all of them. And then we're even hearing more from them saying that not enough is being done to support the elite, the most elite of the corporations, because they themselves are suffering from a lack of purchasing power and spending power and buying power among consumers who are either being locked out or frozen out because they're not being paid. So really all of this is just meant to save a dying economic system and model, and should be a good point that, you know, one of the few silver linings of this would be that we could take this as a moment to say we need to really think differently about how we engage our economic system and its impact on our society, because clearly it's not sustainable.
Well, the other part,
Dr. Bell, name the economy on the face of the earth that's handled this better. Name, practically speaking, what country do you think we should look to as an example of someone who's handled this well, this global crisis? Who's handled it well?
This is a common trope brought up by the right to criticize socialist economies. But another way we could ask the question:
It's not a trope. It's a legitimate question. If you want to be critical of the way the U.S. has handled it, I'm fine with that. But if you want to be critical of the system in general, it's the same question I'd ask anybody. So who do we look to? What compared to what? You have to put it in some comparison. So
I don't think you do. I don't think you do. I don't think you have to compare it to anything. But anyway, Dr. Ball, it's up to you. What do you have to say?
Like the great Lee Morgan asked, compared to what? And exactly right. But one of the reasons we don't have a better model to compare it to is because of the impact of U.S. imperialism on socialist revolutions. That would just be one side point to make. So to rephrase your question, it would be, what would other attempted models look like if the West and the U.S. hadn't constantly invaded and blockaded and...
Okay, but...
Dr. Ball, are you on? Yeah, I think we lost it.
By the way.
No, wait.
Oh.
So
wait, hang on one second. Doctor, hang on one second. Let's make sure we get your connection solid. Andre, if we need to re-get him on, let's do that. Because I do have a point, I want to hear his answer, and then I have a point I'd like to make.
But I see, this is where I disagree with you, Lee. If I say that guy's a bad quarterback, and you say, well, in comparison to who? And I say, I'm not comparing to anybody. I'm saying evaluating based on what I think is a good quarterback, based on my standards, period. I'm not going to compare him to anything, but I think he shouldn't throw 3 touchdowns a game. That's my standards. I don't have to compare him to another quarterback. I'm comparing him to my own standards. So I don't think it's always necessary to have a comparison. But
what is your standard then?
It's fine to talk about my standard, but I don't think I have to, that a comparison to say who else is doing it fine. I don't think that's necessary and an adequate discussion.
A standard, Garland, is by definition a comparison. A standard means that you're evaluating something, and you cannot evaluate something in a vacuum. If I said, my dad's an athlete, what did he get for a score? And I said 3. If you don't know what that means, 3 is just a random number. So anyway, doctor, you're back on, right?
I disagree with you on that, but that's okay. Dr. Ball, go ahead and finish.
that's a poor metaphor to make. One argument to make, because one, we could say the standard should be, the standard shouldn't be tied to the horrific conditions imposed on humanity by those in power. The standard should be even conditions we've not raised ourselves to yet. So my standard, for instance, would be levels of society and conditions we haven't reached yet, in part because of the greed, the avarice, and the capitalist aggression and imperial aggression we continue to suffer. So, for instance, my standard would include instead of just the paltry redirection of redistribution of the wealth we all helped to create, increase it. So the $20 trillion annual GDP could be easily redistributed out of the hands of the 1% or the 400 families that most dominate the economy, the 0.1%, and redistributed just as we're seeing it done now to satisfy the need for the economy to keep moving. We're already seeing that capitalism left on its own, or even in the version that we have now with its government buttressing, isn't sufficient in terms of sustaining society, even in the midst of a relatively light and so far short-term crisis. So what needs to all that...
What's this capitalism you're talking about? Because, if we had my libertarian friends on, they would absolutely say that, for instance, bailing out Boeing is not capitalism in any way, shape, or form. It is a form of corporate socialism. And so if you want to compare it, if you want to not compare it, I guess that's okay. But if you look at China, for instance, you talk about U.S. imperialism. How's China handled this situation? And China became more of a market economy, not due to imperialism, but due to the fact that what they were doing wasn't working. So what's your take on that, Doctor?
Well, one, I think we just wildly disagree on the history of China. That would be one point. But the other point would be, to your point, you just said we can't judge things in a vacuum. China can't be judged in a vacuum. For instance, China can't be judged in a vacuum that doesn't include its relationships business-wise and other to the United States. One of the reasons why, for instance, that China might be struggling to the extent that it is because it has to redirect and rearrange itself to satisfy the productive needs of the West and the United States and not its own capacity and needs. Similar on our end, we're having a difficult time producing the kinds of products and protective measures that we need, in part because our factories have been shipped overseas so that our labor costs could be driven down and we could wipe out the labor movement and the history developed in this country. So there is no vacuum in which we can just say, well, China's bad and the U.S. is good, and everything that China is doing is a mistake, absent any involvement or inclusion or imposition of the United States. You just can't simply say that. It does seem like they... Well, faster than we have in addressing the concern and addressing the virus, and to the extent that they have any kind of safety protective measures for their workers, they're in a better position than certainly we are. And to the extent that there are gaps between the earnings of their administrators or their CEOs and their workers isn't as big as ours, they're in a better position to deal with the crisis than maybe we are. But what I'm simply saying, whether you want to call it capitalism or corporate socialism, whatever label you want to put on it, my standard would be we are all participating in the creation of all this wealth that goes to too few. It needs to be redirected back to the rest of us so that we don't have this kind of the severity of the impact when confronted with a crisis like this, and of course there will be worse ones down the line. So we should take this as if what saves us is an infusion of money we've already helped create, wealth we've helped create back to working people, then we should be doing that in greater amounts on a regular basis, so that this isn't a problem. This isn't a problem to deal with in the face of the next crisis.
And let me go to get back to our original discussion about who gets left out. I think looking at our leadership and what happened in this bill, number one, it should have happened in a day. It should have been this. Firstly, let's go X amount of dollars, go to the people as quickly as possible and pass a clean bill like that to address the people's needs who may literally be starving already. That should have been the issue. But instead, it takes a week to get done. And then when it gets done, it's unrecognizable to me. Well, 1,000 pages is unrecognizable. There's pork in it. How in the world do we do a business as usual in the midst of a pandemic, a business as usual bill with pork in it, with $25 million for the Kennedy Center? It's unfathomable what I'm seeing, that these two, I don't know what they are, elitist clubs that we call parties, come together and play the same old game in the midst of when people are literally dying on the streets. I find it, it just tells me that our leaders and our government are even more out of touch than I could have even imagined. Dr. Ball.
Well, I don't know that they're out of touch. I feel like they're perfectly in touch and in step with what with the world that they've helped to create and that they want to sustain and the world from which they benefit more than anyone. So, I mean, to me, it's of no surprise, even if it is angering and in some sense it may be even illogical. But in another sense, it's not, because the point that I'm trying to make is that the black, the brown, the poor, the people that are already most likely to suffer from a crisis are in the because of an already existing relationship to an economy that has been created by those who would then reconvene to take advantage of this situation to improve their own conditions and positions. And then that's why we're also seeing, in terms of a media context, is very quickly why we see so much more of an uptick in criticism of Cuba and socialism and Bernie Sanders and so on and so forth, because they need to buttress their own realization that many people have to be having at this point with the frailties and the failures of this economic model with some other kind of ideological warfare to protect themselves.
Well, thank you. And thank you very much. We are at the end of the segment. We've been talking with Dr. Jared A. Ball. He's a professor of communication studies at Morgan State University in Baltimore. You can follow him on Twitter at iMixWhatILike and his website, iMixWhatILike.org. Dr. Jared Ball will be right back. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.